Hey, my name is Randall. I am one of the pastors here, and like normally I get to hang out like in the corner for like the pre-service and stuff and for you guys online, so I'm really excited that I get to be with you guys in here today. Over the past good while now, we've been in this series on Luke, and we've been talking about how the God of the universe who poured himself into flesh goes around and keeps inviting people to follow him and to be his disciple. Like, that's one of the themes that I've heard like throughout this whole series. And I love how it starts. Like, it starts with like just a handful of shepherds and then grows into this big movement. We've read this a handful of times now, but look, it starts off with the angels appearing to the shepherds, and they say what? I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. And this is such good news that the shepherds can't help but tell everybody that they run into. All the people. That includes me, includes you, the person sitting next to you, your neighbors, the people that you work with, the people that you love dearly, the people that you don't love so dearly. Like, all the people, it's everybody, and God continually invites us to follow him. Like, that's what we've been talking about. So the rest of the book of Luke and the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, John, and into the book of Acts, which Luke also wrote, tells the account of how it started with the shepherds and ends up to all the people. So we're going to land in Luke chapter 6. And I want us to take a look at something. I want us to look at like the makeup of all of these people that are showing up and listening to Jesus and starting to follow him. Like, what's that about? Who are these people? What does that look like? So if you have your Bible, Luke chapter 6. If you don't, that's okay. We'll throw the verses up on the screen. You've got your phone, so you've got a Bible app. You've got the Google. There's lots of ways to keep up. So here we go. We're going to start in Luke 6. We'll start in verse 12. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spend the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, who he also designated apostles. Simon, who he named Peter, his brother Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon, who was called the Zealot, Judas, son of James, Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. When he went down with them and stood on a level place, a large crowd of his disciples was there and a great number of people from all over Judea, from Jerusalem, from the coastal region around Tyre and Sidon, who had come to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. So there's a lot going on there. Greg talked a few weeks ago about the sermon on the plain. That's where this takes place. We're not going to talk about that today. But again, I want to look at like what just happened. Jesus is choosing his 12 disciples. But before we talk about that too much, did you see how this whole thing started? Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. Okay, like right there. Conviction number one, true confession. How well do we do with that? Jesus is on the cusp of launching his ministry. He's choosing his disciples. And what does he do? He gets away from the crowd and prays. He knows that he needs to spend time with the Father. And we see Jesus do this often, where we'll see him like some big thing's about to happen, something just happened, and he needs to get away from the crowds and be with the Father, to spend intentional time with him and pray. How do we do with that? If I'm honest, like I'm hit or miss. I would be embarrassed to confess how many times I'm faced with some big thing and I just jump in and go for it. I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm the smartest guy that I know. I know a lot of smart people too. God gave me my brain. He gave me this thing. And so I'm just going to go off and do it, right? Maybe for you, though, it's you're too busy, you're moving too fast. Maybe you're not sure that he's paying attention. Maybe you're not sure he's there. And if he is he even really going to do anything? Can I just say that we are invited, we are encouraged to take everything to God? the creator of the universe who infinitely knows me better than I know myself. See, come to find out, I'm not nearly as smart as I think I am. I am in desperate need of God's wisdom, his power, his grace, his mercy. And in the end, all of my abilities, all of my excuses just fail. And God is faithful, and he meets me right where I am. The writer of Hebrews puts it like this: let us approach God's throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. So because of Jesus, we get to approach God's throne and know that he hears our prayer. It doesn't matter how big or seemingly small those prayers might feel. God invites us in. And that's where we receive wisdom and grace and mercy. James reminds us that when we lack mercy, we get to go to God. So I think before we go too much further, we should do just that. Let's model after Jesus and let's now approach God's throne. Will you pray with me? God, I thank you that even now you are with us and you are here, and that you are calling us deeper into your story and deeper into a relationship with you. God, may we hear your voice above all the other voices. God, I don't know what all people came in here with. God, I know that we are facing all kinds of things, both corporately as well as very personally. And God, I thank you that you promised to hear our prayers and enter in. So be with us now. And it's in your name that we pray, Jesus. Amen. So, Jesus gets away from the crowds. He prays. He prays all night. And then we read that he's picking his disciples. But there's something that I tend to skip right over because I go right into the picking of the 12. But what do we read? Verse 13. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and he chose 12 of them, who he also designated apostles. Well, hold on. I thought there were 12 disciples. But what does it say? He gathered his disciples and picked 12. So wait, there was more than 12? Yeah, I mean, and then the 12 that we get to know, he deemed apostles. Well, like, what does that mean? Is there a difference between a disciple and apostle? So a disciple is a follower, a student of a teacher, someone who's who's learning from and being shaped by the teacher. An apostle is a disciple that is specifically being sent out for like a special reason, given special authority from Jesus. So are there apostles today? Because I took a spiritual gift test once and it said I was an apostle. Good question. What we see, sometimes you'll hear somebody who has like the title of apostle, or again, like I have the gift of apostleship. What is that? So what that is really this gift that God gives people like to launch ministries, to launch churches, and then begin to oversee them. That's what the gift of apostleship is. What we see Jesus here with the 12 is he is specifically calling out these 12, giving them special authority, a special mission, and then God uses those 12 in a supernatural way. So that would be the difference. So Jesus specifically calls these guys out: Simon, who he named Peter, his brother Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon, who was called the Zealot, Judas, son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. This list is found a couple of other places. It's in Matthew 10, it's in Mark 3, a couple of places in John. When you read those accounts, you might read a couple of different names. So what's that about? Well, like we just saw, some of these guys went by two names: Simon, Peter, right? Matthew, Levi. Judas, son of James, was also Thaddeus. And like any group of people, a couple of these guys belong to other groups of people, and those groups of people hated each other. Luke's calling this out: Simon the Zealot hanging out with Matthew the tax collector. We're not going to go too far into this. You just need to know that like zealots were this extreme group of Jewish nationalists who were so anti-Rome that they were known to have these violent outbreaks to defend their positions against Rome, and they hated traitors. Within the Zealot group, there were these subgroups, if you will, of the Sicarii. These were even more extreme. They were known to carry these Sicarii daggers, these little short curved daggers that they'd hide up their sleeve. Why would they do that? Well, that way, when you're in a tight group, lots of people, you could sneak up to one of these traitors and get them without being caught. Now, we don't know that Simon was a member of the Sicarii, but he was a zealot. So it's safe to assume that if he wasn't, he would have known who those guys were. The tax collectors, why the hate for tax collectors? True story. This past week, I was on hold with the IRS for over 3 hours. It's crazy. Don't write a story there. They called me, something about my Social Security being canceled and the authorities were coming after me. Look, here's the deal. It wasn't cheap, but we got it all worked out, okay? So... No, it was some stupid tax return thing and nobody knew how to help me, so I kept getting bounced around and put on hold. It was awful. It was awful. Tax collectors were charged by Rome to collect taxes, and they had this quota. Anything above that quota that they collected, they got to keep. So they were the epitome of a traitor, the very people that a zealot would have hated and quite literally wanted to kill. And here they are, a zealot and a tax collector in the same group that was following Jesus, the same group that Jesus handpicks to be his disciples. Only Jesus could make that work. For me, it gives me great comfort to think that there were these people that were linking arms and following Jesus that vehemently disagreed with each other about politics, no less. How did that work? I think they found something. I think they found someone that was bigger than their disagreements. So instead of anchoring their life on a political ideology or a political figure or anything like that, they put that to the side and followed Jesus. Instead of looking to their own agenda, they looked to him. So here they are, joining in, linking arms, and following Jesus. Each one of these guys had to lay down their way of life in an act of obedience and follow Jesus. Sometimes I read the headlines, I see what someone posts online or tweets out into the universe, and I'm like, man, we have got a long way to go before we are unified on anything. I totally disagree with this person's opinion. I can't believe they think that. And then I read all of these well-thought-out comments in the comment sections, and I'm like, man, we have got a long way to go. I cannot believe that somebody would think that Oklahoma's move to the SEC would somehow show that they're the subpar athletic program, and though they're going to be just fine, thank you very much. That was for you. So the fact that Jesus had a core group of disciples that would have hated each other and what they stood for actually gives me hope. Whatever it is that divides us, surely focusing on Jesus and following him should bring us together. We have a common mission, a common calling. And if we keep reading, we find out that the group of disciples that Jesus picked from was actually a crowd. He went down with them and stood on a level place. A large crowd of his disciples was there and a great number of people from all over Judea, from Jerusalem, from the coastal region around Tyre and Sidon. Tyre and Sidon, what you need to know about them is it's modern day Lebanon. It's about a day's journey to the Sea of Galilee where all of this is happening. There's a storied history with those towns. They had turned their back on God. They were not friendly. They were enemies of the children of God. But here we see people from there making the day's journey to hear what this Jesus guy has to say. Like, word is getting out. But did you catch that? A large crowd of disciples. So how many people are in a crowd? For some people, three is a crowd. He picked 12, so there was at least 13. Could you imagine if it was 13? You know, like Jesus is picking the 12. Oh, Eugene. You know what? We're gonna go in a different direction. Thanks. No, like it was a crowd of disciples, a crowd of people. So just for fun, just to break things up, like turn to your neighbor. What's the biggest crowd that you've been a part of? How many people were there? What was that? If you have the app, log into the app, and we'll ask that same question there so I can get some of those answers. But tell that story. What's the biggest crowd that you've been a part of? I'm going to show a video. This came out like a little while ago, but I love it. We edited it down to make it shorter, but it starts, well, just watch this here. It starts off with this, like, first of all, I know what you're thinking. No, that's not me. Those are my dance moves, but it's not me. But I love this because it starts off with this one guy and then like, oh, a couple more people are showing up. And then, you know, he's still going and even more people. And by the end of this thing, just like crowds and crowds, like there's just like this mass movement of sea of people, right? Like I love that. And I know, here's the deal. Some of you guys are watching this and you're like, man, that is awesome. And you have been the fourth guy in. Others of you guys are kind of freaking out going, no, like I'm more of the three's a crowd kind of person. And so even the hint that there's gonna be a lot of people, like I'm out. Like I know we're all over the map there, right? If I'm honest, like I'm kind of somewhere in the middle. I know that's a cop out. If I'm gonna go somewhere and I know that there's gonna be a lot of people, I'm probably gonna find the couch or the corner and hang out with like a handful of my friends and we're gonna talk all night, we'll have a blast and it'll be great. Others of you, like, you know, give me the crowds, I want a sea of people. So I don't like bolt for the doors when there's a whole lot of people. You guys are kind of freaking me out, but I'm okay, right? Like I can handle a large crowd, but it's, you know, I much prefer somewhere in the middle. When I was in college, a buddy and I, we would go to all of these concerts and shows that would come through town. And he would be the guy that would be like right in the middle of the mosh pit because those were the kind of shows we went to. I was the guy on the end, just kind of taking it all in, watching everything and just having a blast there. So I know we're all over the map when it's that. There's also the contrarian part of me where like if I see a whole bunch of people doing something, I'm probably gonna call it lame and go do my own thing. Side note, I am well aware that we're here talking about crowds in the middle of a pandemic. Like, I get it. Like, I'm like you, I'm watching the Olympics and it's weird. We're watching gymnastics, we're watching soccer, we're watching volleyball, we're watching track and field, and it's awesome, but it's eerily quiet. Like, there should be stadiums filled with people cheering on their athletes, their countries, but instead, it's kind of quiet. That's what it's been like watching sports on TV for the past too long. It's just quiet. And I know that some of you, again, you're ready to just be out there and be in the thick of things, and others are like, I'm not there yet. Give me some time. Most of us are somewhere in the middle. I think we would all love to just fast forward to the time when it's not. But the biggest crowd that I've been in, I've been at college football games. 90,000 some odd people, and it's electric, and it's awesome, and my team's winning, and it's great. Been to a music festival in the middle of Pennsylvania somewhere. 125,000 people were there, and it was so cool. One of our coworkers, somebody on staff, their family goes to the Indy 500 every year. 250,000 people. Like, that is ridiculous, right? So what did you guys come up with? Downtown St. Louis during the World Series? Yes, yes. Somebody put in Alabama football games. Do people go to those? Garth Brooks concert, lots of concerts here. Downtown Rome on vacation, lots of people. Most of us have been in like big crowds. But here's the deal, a crowd doesn't always have to be about a sheer number of people. Like I've been to concerts like in the basement of a club and it's sold out and it's packed and it feels like it might as well be in a huge arena. The high school crowd, it's not going to be in the thousands, maybe not even 100, but it's still a crowd. We read in Luke 10 that Jesus sends out the 72. We know on a couple of occasions, Jesus feeds the crowd. On one of those occasions, there was 5,000 men, so add on the women and kids. Luke 12 tells us that there was many thousands gathered. So it's safe to say that when Luke is telling us that there was a crowd, there's a lot of people. And Jesus had this interesting relationship with the crowds. Everywhere that Jesus went, crowds showed up. They were curious. They were wanting to be healed. They were hurting. They were hearing words that had power and authority, and they were intrigued. His hometown didn't know what to do with him. Like, they didn't like some of the things he was saying. We read about how Jesus would say difficult things and people would walk away. They would follow Jesus when things were amazing and there's miracles and he's, you know, healing people and feeding people. But when Jesus would call out sin or what it really means to be a disciple and follow him, they opt out. A crowd of people would ultimately be who calls for Jesus' death. And these crowds were made up of peasants, of shepherds, of farmers, common folks. But they were also the religious elite. They were the highly educated, the poor and the wealthy. The Israelites and the Gentiles. They were men and women and even kids. Basically, everyone. And over again, we see Jesus respond to the crowds with compassion. One time, he sees the crowd of people and he looks to his disciples and says, these people, they're like sheep without a shepherd. But here we have a crowd of disciples. Actually, though, what did we read? A crowd of disciples and a great number of people. I don't think Luke is making a distinction between like the number of people. Like, he's not saying, well, a crowd is this big and a great number of people is this big. No, he's calling out there's two groups of people here, and only one of these groups are really following him. Not following in the sense of wherever Jesus went, they went to. Like, it's not that. It's they were following his teachings. They were doing what he said. They were beginning to orient their life towards Jesus. We talked about this a few weeks ago, but in the middle of the sermon on the plain, Jesus calls it out. He says, look, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and you don't do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears what I say and then puts it into practice, I'll tell you what they're like. And he goes on and tells this parable of the builder who built his house on a firm, solid foundation. So a disciple is someone who's following Jesus so closely, they begin to sound like Jesus. They begin to think like Jesus. They begin to love like Jesus. They're associated with Jesus. They obeyed. They went home and put into practice the things that Jesus told them to do. The other group was just around. Like, they knew what he was saying. They heard him, but then they did whatever. When they heard something they didn't like, they left. They heard, but didn't obey. That's the difference between being a disciple and not. Obedience. Am I willing to obey what Jesus says, even if it's not popular, even if it's not easy or convenient or what I want in the moment? Like, when's the last time we like looked at ourselves and asked, like, man, okay, am I obeying? Am I really following Jesus? Or am I just kind of in this thing for me? Is it for me and just maybe when it's easy? And I think we need to call something out real quick. We all know this. Crowds are made up of individuals. Luke's not trying to say that, like, if you're in the crowd of disciples, that's what makes you a disciple. Like, if you sit at the jock table at lunch, that makes you an athlete. It's not what he's saying. See, you can be in a crowd of disciples following Jesus and not be one yourself. When Jesus asked the question, "Why do you call me Lord?" it's a very personal question that solicits a very personal answer. The invitation is to me. Am I following Jesus? Am I obeying what he says? Am I a disciple? What am I doing with Jesus? You can't hide from Jesus in a crowd. Just showing up in a crowd of people doesn't really make you anything. We know that. In fact, sometimes it might make things a little bit more difficult because you can kind of diffuse things. Because he's not really talking to me. He's talking to that guy over there. Like, me and Jesus, we're cool. That guy, whew. No, Jesus is looking at me dead in the eyes. And he's asking me to follow him. He's asking me to obey. He's asking you. Showing up on the weekends, tuning in online, serving on a team, even serving our city. Those are great things, even things that even Jesus asks us to do. But it's not just that. Each one of us has to come to the end of ourselves and trust Jesus to forgive and lead us. All of those individual people that were following Jesus, all together, they made up the crowd. And can you imagine what it would be like to be in a crowd of disciples with a group of people that are following Jesus, that are obeying what he has to say? Some of you guys can because you're in that crowd. You're doing that. For you guys watching online in the pre-service, like I kind of poked my head in over there and talked about the crowd of disciples that I was a part of in college. And I am eternally thankful for this group of guys that called me out and called me to keep following Jesus and encouraged me and championed me. Like, I'm eternally grateful for those guys in college. Many of you guys have those kinds of stories, right? Where you're actually in a group of disciples. But back to the dancing guy, right? Like, one guy that's really cool, he's doing it. But then when more people join in and all of a sudden it grows and grows to where there's now this sea of people. Now that's a movement. Jesus calls us to be the light of the world. You're the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light up a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, and they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. So how does that work? Okay, real quick. This is a map of St. Louis. Look at that. So I live right here. Stop by sometime, bring pie. We'll have a good time. Over the past couple of weeks, I work here. I actually went up to Mid Rivers the other day, so somewhere right in there. Went to go to a friend's house here, had dinner with some friends right here, went up 109 because that's what you do. My wife and I went out to eat right there. We went downtown. my wife and I actually went on one of those serve days, and we were up right in here, went to go see my friend Hawkins over there. Like, this is just a few of the places where I went over the past couple of weeks. It's not everywhere. Don't stalk me. But this is some of the places where I went over the past handful of weeks. I asked a few people at each of our sites, so Grants Trail, Fenton, Mid Rivers, like, where did you go? Take this map and draw out where you went. And this is where they went. And this is just a few of us. Imagine what it would be like if we took the iPad and we passed it around, like, okay, zoom in, get really close, and like draw out all the places where you went, where your family went, all of the places where you went. Imagine what kind of ground we could cover. But this is just St. Louis. I know that we have people watching online who don't live in St. Louis. Like, what about me? So real quick, this is a map of where people join us online week in, week out. Like, that's incredible, right? Like, how cool is that to be in a part of a community of faith that reaches this far? But that's just the state. Let's zoom out even further. Like, this is now people who watch literally around the world. These are all of the opportunities that you have to be a light in your community. This is how a church makes a kingdom-sized impact. Because every spot on this map, every place that we go, we get to be a light. We get to make a difference. And like the shepherds, we get to tell everybody the good news that will cause great joy for all the people. And we do that with our words and our actions. But let's not get confused though, okay? This is not about us. This is not about the crossing and how cool we think we are or anything like that. Like, no, this is about Jesus. In fact, there are a ton of churches in the St. Louis region who love God, who point people to Jesus, who hold up his word as true. And I am so thankful for our pastors and our staff who have relationships with these other pastors and staff around the area. And I'm so thankful that we share resources back and forth and we bounce off ideas and we link arms together and we partner with each other. Like, I love what God's doing around the region. And that's what God calls us to do, right? He calls us to link arms together. He calls us to partner with other churches and other organizations, other people, to show the world what it looks like to love each other, to encourage each other, and to cheer for each other. But dots, lines on a map, doesn't mean we're being a light. We actually have to get out and interact with the world around us. Those lines and dots are opportunities that God puts us before us. Following Jesus means we actually have to do something. Living a life of obedience means it actually matters how I treat people. It actually matters how I serve people. It matters the things I say, both out loud and on the internet. It matters how I treat my family, how I love my neighbor. It matters how we handle disagreements, how we handle conflict, and how quick I am to apologize. When Jesus asks us to do something, we do it. When we, as individuals, give our life to Jesus, he moves in and begins to shape us and change us. Our life begins to be formed by his Spirit, and our homes begin to change. Our work begins to change. Our schools begin to change. Our neighborhood begins to change. My world, like the one that I personally interact with each and every week, begins to change. But then I get to do that with you. And our worlds interact. So as you follow Jesus and I follow Jesus and we do that together, and we can link arms with another, and then the next thing you know, we invite somebody else in, and we're linking arms, and the next thing you know, we're a crowd of disciples who are following Jesus. That's what Luke shows us. So fast forward, we're now to the book of Acts, again, which Luke also wrote. This is after the resurrection. Peter, one of the apostles, is preaching to the crowds. He's telling the crowd of people about the God of the universe who poured himself into flesh. He tells them about the forgiveness of sin, about what it means to follow Jesus. He tells the crowds about how Jesus came, died for their sins, and then rose from the dead. Luke tells us that when Peter was finished, those who accepted his message were baptized, and about 3,000 were added to their number that day. The crowds just keep getting bigger. More and more people hear about Jesus, how Jesus is inviting them in into a life with him, how he invites them to follow him, and they do. So one more time, if you're checking this whole thing out, if you've got questions about who this Jesus is and what it means to follow him, let's go ask those questions. We would love to dive into that conversation with you. That happens all the time around here. But if you want to know what it means to be his disciple, like, this is a piece of that. So can you imagine now what our region would look like if we actually loved each other like Jesus? If we were a crowd of disciples that served our neighbors, if we were a crowd of disciples that put our differences aside and focused and oriented our life on him, what would our neighborhoods look like? What would our schools look like? That's what this whole For the Loom movement is all about. And so many of you guys have jumped in on that. The stories are amazing. We'll hear more of these stories in coming weeks. But it's you guys. You're taking God's call seriously. You're caring for those around you. You're caring for the poor. You're serving your neighbors. You're serving people you don't even know. You're crossing divides. It's you. It's you and your friends. It's you and your family investing your time and your resources and your linking arms together. In a very real way, you're being light in our city. Amazing things happen when you bring your gifts and you lay them before Jesus. And then I bring mine and we do this thing together. And then somebody else joins in and they bring their gifts and we start to link arms. And what starts off really small ends up being just this massive movement. That's how you light up a city. A few weeks ago, our team caught up with a group of you guys who were out serving our communities and got to talk to some of them and capture some of that. We also got a chance to talk to one of our worship leaders, Lloyd, who was so undone about this idea of like being a light in the city that he wrote a song about that. So, one more time. If you're waiting to jump in, it is not too late. If you're wrestling with what it means to be a follower of Jesus, let's ask that question. Let's enter into that conversation. If you're wrestling with, okay, so is baptism my next step in following Jesus? Let's go. Let's talk. But for all of us, God is calling us to follow him into this great adventure. So watch this.
Well, when Jesus calls us to be the city on a hill, I think it's a call to action. I think he's telling us, look, you need to get some skin in the game. You need to get dirty. You need to get your hands dirty and get out there and be my hands and my feet.
We are here to link arms with the community here in order to provide a space that will hopefully provide some smiles on some people's faces, some people that need to see some action, some results from some things going on. But more than anything else, I just think that God calls us into a community like this, and it gets done. And it gets done usually by multiple people, sometimes organizations, sometimes just like us individuals out here. Maybe the next time we show up here, things are actually getting planted. You know, we don't know. We're not counting the minutes, we're not counting the days. We're counting the opportunities. And those opportunities that God gives us are just so wonderful and so great. And even have to come maybe even 45 minutes or some people maybe even an hour to get to this place, it's worth it.
And we are better when we do this together. So this is not gonna happen overnight. This is not gonna happen by us simply praying. This is gonna happen by us actually getting out there and actively seeking these things out.
My first picture, my first thought was the fact is that there's a bunch of fireflies right here in this little garden right here. And we're beaming this little light on this neighborhood and people are noticing. And I think light has a lot to do with the fact is that action is taking place. You know, I think something happens when you turn a switch on, light goes on, it attracts something. Light always attracts something, and it always breaks darkness. And so just the thought and idea that if there is darkness in this neighborhood, I pray to God that this little light, all of our little glows here, make a difference for people, that they can see something happening in the region and in their neighborhood.
So this whole thought of being the light of the world, being city lights, needs to be more than a song. It needs to be more than the words that we sing together. But I think that us as believers need to actively live this out. After we leave out of these doors, let us be the city lights, the lights that shines on a hill that cannot be hid.